The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing. It's the second Wednesday of the month, which is our traditional question and answer day. Not always question and answer day. Sometimes other people's schedules get in the way, and we don't get to do question and answer day. But this month, we are in good shape. It is the day when there's no planned show whatsoever. You just hopefully have some questions, and I will attempt to give you even correct answers to them, but you gotta get them over here. There's a couple of ways to do that. One is via phone, 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. You can also send them by email to vinaradio@gmail.com. That's V like in Victor, E-N-A, radio@gmail.com. Or you can even text 513-432-4961. 513-432-4961. While we're waiting for your awesome questions about the real estate market or exit strategies or getting started or getting out or buying, selling, whatever. A couple of quick things coming up. First of all, the Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati is on this upcoming Saturday hosting an all-day meeting called How to Plan Your Rehab Right with Jerry Fink, who was a guest here on the show along with Rebecca Cicada about 3 weeks ago. Jerry has gone out and found an ugly property that he has walked through with a camera person. So for the express purpose of you kind of walking it with him, if you will, on Saturday and figuring out what the repair costs are so that you can then, along with him, create a statement of work for a contractor so that you can then hire a contractor based on actual numbers, not on his bid or what we're guessing that it's going to cost or how if you want to do rehabs or you've been doing them and they haven't been like as systematized and organized as you want them to be, you probably want to be in that class. It's $47 if you're a member, $97 if you are not, at CincinnatiREIA.com, CincinnatiREIA.com. Next up, the National Real Estate Investing Summit coming up here in Cincinnati on November 5th through 8th. We still have, I believe, 5 pairs of President's Special tickets, the tickets that Scott Ellsworth offered while I was not here a month ago. And they said people can come for $297 for a pair of tickets, which is, I think, about $100 cheaper than what they're being offered for on OREA's own website. I'm really excited about this year's summit because I am in the midst of talking to potential presenters, and I always find that very interesting and stimulating because I keep meeting these people who are doing very interesting things, who are going to end up coming to speak to you at the summit to tell you about their interesting things. I'll give you a great example. Today, I talked to 2 different folks who are in different ends of the apartment business. The apartment business has kind of been declared DOA at this point, right? Because the sellers all still want to sell their buildings at 5 caps, even though the interest interest rates are at 6.5%. And if you don't know why that math doesn't work, you probably should learn a little bit more about apartments before you go out to buy them. But I talked to a fellow this morning who is actively buying buildings in like the 4 to 20 unit range. So not the big giant ones where the investors are sitting around hoping, I guess, that some insurance company will come buy their property at a 5 cap and pay cash. Well, I don't know what they're hoping for. But he's got a very particular way in which he does it. I don't want to give away what he's going to talk about. One thing is he's picking very specific markets, and he owns properties in 3 different states. And a second thing is that he's picking them in very specific areas of those markets. And also, he is self-managing 85 units in 3 states. Let that sink in for a second. So he's going to be joining us at the summit to talk about how all of that is working. How is he still buying properties that are cash flowing successfully in a 6.5% market? And then I talked to another gentleman who's going to be joining us who is taking advantage of the crash and burn that's going on in the big apartment world, where a lot of people who bought buildings in 2021 thinking that, you know, hey, rents aren't going to go anyplace but up. And also rents are going to go up, and also interest rates are not going to go up. And now they are finding that they cannot refi at the end of their 5-year loan terms, and they are defaulting on the loans. So what this gentleman out of Virginia is doing is he is buying the defaulted notes on the apartment buildings at pennies on the dollar. And then he is getting the buildings and, if necessary, you know, getting bad people out and whatnot. And then he's reselling them for a profit. Like he's found a way to get these apartment buildings for pennies on the dollar, and it's via the notes. So I had some long conversations with these folks today. What they're doing is really interesting. And that's the kind of people that we're bringing to you at the summit this year. So if you'd like to get one of those pairs of in-person tickets for $297, again, that's a pledge to WMKV. You're supporting public radio when you do it, and you're getting the tickets cheaper than anybody else is getting them right now. Do that by going to WMKVFM.org. WMKVFM.org. Just scroll down to the bottom of the page. You will see a pledge form that says National RIA Summit. And you will be able to grab those as long as there's still some pairs left. So it's question and answer week. And with no calls at 877-772-9658, we're going to go to the inbox here and see what people are asking. So a question from Tom in South Carolina. He says, I'm negotiating with a buyer for terms on an owner finance deal. They would like to move into the property ASAP and put half down of the contract price in 6 to 12 months. I don't like that they're going to move in now and put down a down payment in 6 to 12 months. We promise, but let's try going on with this. I suggested a lease option with an agreement to owner finance. That was a good move there, Tom, because that way if they never come up with the down payment money or they turn out like not to be good or whatever, you can just evict them. How do I establish the option price, which would be credited toward the principal at closing and determine an interest rate? They are looking for a rate competitive with current mortgage or lower. Could this work out for both of us? They would prefer I carry the financing for the entire term of the loan. FYI, they are motivated buyers, and I am a motivated seller. Okay, so Thomas, I assume they are homeowners, that these are not investors, since you said they want to move in to the property. I assume that there's some reason that they need you to carry the financing for the entire term. That reason probably has to do with their credit. It could have to do with something else, like they are contractors and don't declare all of their income, or they are in a cash business that they just don't report their income. You need to find out what's going on here. You need to Number one, before you talk about any terms, you need to get these people qualified. If the property needs any work, I know you didn't mention that, but sometimes we sell properties like repair for equity. They need to be making four times the amount of the monthly payment. If it is something that's, you know, kind of maybe not perfect, but definitely move in condition, ready to go, the normal like three times the monthly payment that you would do with a tenant is fine. Remember that ultimately their monthly payment is going to include taxes and insurance. So don't leave that out of your head when you're trying to figure out what three or four times the monthly payment is. Establishing the option price is going to depend on, again, the condition of the property. If it is a repair for equity type deal where it's livable, but it's not like you wouldn't probably sell it on the open market kind of livable, then you're going to probably take the after repaired value. So let's say that's $300,000. And you're going to subtract what it would cost you with contractors to do the work. So if that's $50,000, that's going to give us a sale price of $250,000, give or take. Why is it repair for equity if you're charging them what the house is worth minus the amount that it would cost you to do the work? Because A, in all likelihood, they are going to do the work, so it's not going to cost them $50,000. B, they want bank rate financing, but they can't go get a bank loan. So there's a certain amount of risk here that since you can't do what banks do and deal with the risk by raising the interest rate, you're going to do it by raising the price a little bit over what you would be able to sell it for on the open market. So hopefully you understood that math. Now, this idea of we're going to do a lease purchase first, and when you come up with a down payment, then your option to buy will be an option to buy it with payments at terms that we're agreeing on now. That's what the option would say. It would say you can buy it for $250 cash, or you can buy it for $250 under the following terms. Interest rates currently for homeowners are around 6.25%. If you happen to, in fact, get the 50% down when they go into this new financing, you will probably be able to sell a 6.25% to 6.5% loan. If you decide, like, I want to cash out of this and you decide to sell the loan, a 50% down payment goes a long way toward making that loan worth more money. Now, are you going to be able to sell it at face value at 6.25%, even with 50% down? After they've had 6 months or a year's worth of on-time payments, maybe. I would still expect to take a slight discount, but I mean, 50% down goes a long way if you ever want to sell the loan. You are going to carry the financing for the entire term of the loan because these people are homeowners and you kind of have to do that now under Dodd-Frank. You can't really put a balloon in something like a mortgage or a land contract with the homeowners anymore. So I think you've got an overall good plan. I'm just not sure you know how to implement it. So, because there's going to be obviously contracts, there's going to be some math about what is the monthly payment. You want them to pay you the taxes and insurance, and then you make sure that they're actually paid because you don't want to end up foreclosing on them because they got behind in their taxes. There's some detail stuff here. But I think you've got overall a good plan. So I appreciate your question, Tom. So you know, I had been advertising over the last few weeks that we had a survey going about implementation classes. You know, that said what do you need to learn? Not just learn, but like actually do. Like buy your first rental, wholesale your first deal, find your first private lender. One of the things that was asked was do you need an implementation class on selling with owner financing? And that one came out number one. So you're probably going to hear about a selling with owner financing class that'll be 6 weeks and include contracts and homework and things like that coming up sometime in the next, maybe starting in the next 6 to 8 weeks. So just so you know, appreciate your question. We need to take a quick break. It's question and answer week here on Real Life Real Estate Investing. Any questions that you have, you can call them in at 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658, or send them via email, vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I am your host, Vina Jones Cox, and it is question and answer week. We have lots of ways for you to ask questions, and one that's proving very popular today is the text line at 513-432-4951. 613-432-4951. I'm looking right at it, and I still didn't say it right. It's been a long day. I don't know if you know this, but I rode my bike to Columbus over the 4th of July holiday.
Wow.
And I really felt like I did good, you know, because I'm not in the world's best shape. I didn't train for it very much. And I was going like 30 miles a day. And I came back going, oh, it's so awesome. My knees don't hurt. My legs don't hurt. But I think I've hurt my brain. I think it's been like the last couple of days, I've been making mistakes like that a lot where I just like I reach for a word and the wrong one comes out of my mouth. 513-432-4961 is the text number. I mean, it was really hot. Maybe my brain boiled.
And still an impressive ride.
It was. I am impressed with myself. I'm so impressed that now I want to ride to Cleveland, which is over twice as far. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, because of the way the bike trail goes, it's over twice as far. So questions, all questions are open today. So, I've got a text question, which is with no name on it, by the way, guys, this is just somebody's phone. We can't tell who you are just from your phone number. But Bob says that the number's from East Tennessee. How can we go find private money without violating SEC general solicitation violations? And okay, let me start by saying, of course, I am not an attorney. SEC type law is a very specialized area. And when most of the time when we're talking about the SEC and we don't put a name in front of it, we're talking about the US SEC. The chance that you are going to run across the United States Securities and Exchange Commission because you are borrowing money secured by a house, secured by a mortgage, you know, a deed of trust in Tennessee, are not huge in my observation. Like, I don't see a whole bunch of people who are doing individual loans on individual properties that the United States SEC is getting involved in some, you know, $200,000 deal. It is, of course, still the case that there are laws about it, but who you're way more likely to run across is your state's Securities and Exchange Commission. And each state tends to have some kind of specialized rules about, do you even need an exemption if you are raising money that's going to be secured by a piece of real estate via a mortgage or deed of trust. Some of them are specific about how many loans you can get before they're going to want to see some kind of an application for an exemption. Some of them have a dollar figure. If you're borrowing money from across state lines, so you're in Tennessee, but your money's coming from Kentucky and Indiana, the chances are that you need to do extra stuff with the U.S. SEC. But the basic rules that people violate all the time, like I see these violations almost daily, is you cannot make offers. And an offer is, here's how much money I want, and here's how long I need it, and here's how much I'm willing to pay for it to the public without a pretty expensive SEC exemption. And even when you have that SEC exemption, it still limits the kind of solicitations you can make. So don't put it on your Facebook page or anyone else's Facebook page that you are willing to pay 12% to get private money for 6 months for a rehab that you're doing, because that's a specific offer. The people that you're allowed to make specific offers to, in general, are people who are known to you. And then we get into all these things about what does that mean? Like, you know, some attorneys say, well, you have to have met them X number of times, or, you know, they have to be friends and family. I don't, in from what I've learned from people who were very specific SEC attorneys, is that neither one of those things are true. What that really means is that you have to understand what their investment goals are, how much they have to invest, are they accredited, are they sophisticated, are they none of the above. And yeah, you basically have to like pre-qualify investors before you say, here's how much money I would like to borrow and here's at what rate I would like to do that. So generally, folks who are really trying to follow the law, and that should be all of us, are that we have some kind of an investor application. And it says, how much do you have to invest? What are your goals in terms of how long you would like to have it out and how you would like to have it backed and things of that nature? Are you sophisticated? This is what that means. Are you accredited? This is what that means. Do you have some advisor who is sophisticated or accredited? Like there's a, you can probably find this on Google somewhere. There's a form that you would use for stuff like this. And then when people make that application, you don't borrow money from folks who can't afford to lose it. If you borrow $1 million from somebody who is an accredited investor who also really understood the investment and the investment went bad and they lost every dime of their money, they might sue you. They might report you to the SEC. The question of whether anything would happen to you is, I mean, you'd have a miserable few months while you were dealing with, it might even be a few years while you're doing lawsuits and whatnot, but the law doesn't tend to sympathize a lot with the accredited investor who went in knowingly making $1 million investment and lost it. If, on the other hand, you take grandma's last $10,000 and you lose it, you're going to maybe be on the front page of the paper. Because where's grandma getting another $10,000? You know, it's not like she's going to go back to work to get back the money that she inherited from her late husband, right? So what you got to be really careful of is don't make public offers. Don't hang bandit signs that say, I pay 12% backed by real estate. Don't put it on Facebook. Get to know the people that you're borrowing from. I know a lot of private borrowers seem to be in an all-fired hurry. Like, I need the money right now, so I'm just going to tell everybody. I'm just going to leave flyers out at my RIA meeting that say, I need money at 12% interest for 6 months. You need to develop these relationships over a long period of time and have some freaking sense about who you're borrowing from. And also, you know, you just be somebody who is not going to lose their money. Don't go borrow some private money on your very, very first retail deal that you've got no contractors. You don't really know how to figure out what the property's worth or what the work is going to cost. And you're going to end up losing money, but it's going to be their money. I'm not saying don't do your first retail deal. I'm not even saying don't let it be privately funded, but for heaven's sakes, partner with somebody who really knows what they're doing on that first deal so that you don't lose somebody else's money. It's not, even if you don't get in trouble, it's not a good feeling when you've taken a big chunk of somebody's retirement funds and you can't give it back to them at the end of the time. So again, how do you do it without violating SEC solicitation regulations? The answer is don't solicit. Get to know people. I mean, it's actually fine to let people know that you do have money partners and borrow private money and whatnot. Just don't openly say here's how much. And also, I'm going to say it again, go talk to somebody who's maybe an attorney and familiar with SEC regulations in your state, please. Because it could be completely different in Tennessee for all I know. But good question. Thank you, whoever that anonymous person was. Let's see. Question from Darren in Detroit. Wholesaler from Michigan. Been to your wholesaling boot camp. Boy, that was a while back. And have two potential creative deals. I don't know how to structure. I believe one is a subject to and the other one not sure. One in Dayton, Ohio. One in Baysville, Ohio. Open to creative solutions. Spoke to Sarah at your office, and she said she will have you contact me. Wondering if you could look at them and see if we can make something happen. You know, I get requests like this reasonably often on this email, which, by the way, I only check once a week. You guys know that I am not in this email every day seeing if you have questions for the radio show. I see this email one time a week. And I'm never 100% sure how to respond to them, because oftentimes they're requests that, like, come off the radio and spend an hour or two on the phone with me working out how I can do this deal for myself. And I got to be honest with you, ladies and gentlemen, I do not have time for things like that. I've got a lot of irons in the fire, as many of you know. My best general recommendation for something like that is join Cincinnati RIA. I know you're in Michigan, but most of the meetings are online anyway. There are meetings once a week that are basically deal meetings. It's basically, hey, help me work this out. And, that's what everybody's there for. And the meetings are online. Darren did the right thing, though, here, because Darren was very clear, at least it's clear to me, that he's saying, give me advice so that if there's a deal here, we can both make money off of it. Now, I'm not saying this for me. Okay, I just realized it sounds like I'm saying, yeah, send me all these emails and offer me part of your deal to consult with you. That is not what I'm saying. I'm saying when you are asking an experienced investor to spend a bunch of time with you working out a fairly complicated deal that, let's face it, might not work out. I mean, even most of the deals I start down the road on do not work out. That's just the name of the game. The way to get their attention and their help is to offer them part of the deal. Like, they would like that more than they would like money. They would definitely like that more than they would like to be taken to coffee and have their brain picked. most experienced investors get that offer 9 times a week. There aren't enough days in the week to be taken out to Wendy's every day by everybody who wants to just pick your brain for a little while. So Darren, I will contact you. I'll give you a better email than this where I will actually see it. And yes, I know you, because I know we've done this before. It's been a while, but I will get back to you. But for everybody else, just please don't, especially when you're new or newer to a particular type of strategy, don't be, I'm going to say greedy. You're going to say, oh, but it's the other person who's being greedy. I'm the one who has the deal and they want part of it. No, I'm going to say you don't be greedy by saying, impart upon me your however many years of experience out of the goodness of your heart. Because the goodness of experienced investors' heart gets sucked up really early on in their careers. I can't tell you how many investors I know who will not go to their local RIA group because everybody knows them and everybody knows that they're really successful, and they come to see a particular speaker or to come meet with their buddies from RIA, and the second they walk in the door, they are just like, you know, overwhelmed with people who are saying, can I just ask you one quick question? Hey, can I take you out to lunch? Can I do this? And at the beginning, you do this because you're so thrilled that anybody cares what you have to say. And it really does feel like, you know, it's out of the goodness of my heart. I was given to, I'm giving back. And it people get cynical because they do it truly out of the goodness of my heart. I'm not trying to get anything out of your deal. I'm trying to help a new investor that I really like. And then what happens is the new investor does nothing with the information, does not take the advice, Or if they do, you never know it because they never like pick up the phone and call and say, oh my God, I really want to thank you. I did that deal. You really got me started. Like they just disappear off the face of the earth. So you don't even get the good feeling. So we try to encourage people to find good people to hang out with. And yes, nobody's going to ask you to split a deal because they gave you 2 minutes worth of advice at a RIA meeting. But when you really want somebody involved in your deal like this, do what Darren did. Be specific. Don't wait for them to say to you, hey, I'll do it because I want half the deal. Because most people won't say that. Like, I don't want to feel like all predatory like that. I'm just going to say I don't have time, which is true. But I do have time if there's a potential deal or part of a deal for me at the end of the rainbow. So yes, Darren, thank you for, I wasn't trying to lecture you. You did the right thing, I think. I was just trying to point out a dynamic that I don't think a lot of people understand about newer investors trying to deal with very experienced investors. It's question and answer week. We need to take a quick break. You still have time if you wanted to call 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. Or you can send an email. It's vinoradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. It's question and answer week. Mostly it seems like we're going to be on the phones and the texts today. Question from Dave. Question is, what do you see is the current state of the market and what are workable strategies, exit strategies for this stage or state of the market? You know, that is the question of the year. And it was also the question of the year last year, because this year is just more of the same from last year. And I'm glad you asked it the way you did, because I think most of the people who were very concerned with asking the question, when is it going to go back to like it was in 2020 and 2021, have kind of left the stage. Like they're not. They went and did something else, because it's pretty clear that that is not happening anytime soon. We are not going to have crazy appreciation in rents, crazy appreciation in house values, crazy low interest rates. And by the way, it wasn't crazy appreciation as much as it was crazy inflation. That the dollars that you were buying your rent in and the dollars you were buying your houses in just became significantly less valuable during that couple of years. And yes, there was also a lot of demand driven by the 2.5% interest rates. A lot of people bought houses that might have waited a little longer to do that because of the 2.5% interest rates. But we are now in a market that my best guess is going to last for years. I think this kind of stagnant sideways, prices are too high for a lot of people to afford. Rents are too high for a lot of people to afford. Those will come down before prices do, by the way. I think we could be in that stage for 5 to 10 years. And here's why. Rents and prices so outpaced incomes that eventually people's incomes will go up enough to afford a house that would have been a $250,000 house in 2019 is now a $450,000 house. The person who wants to live in that same house in that same neighborhood will eventually be able to afford $450,000 easily. And then those houses will sell quicker and the prices will start to go up again. But until that happens, like, what are we expecting? You know, the only reason I think that prices haven't gone down a lot is because we are still experiencing a housing shortage. There's not enough rentals for everybody who would like to rent. There's not enough houses for everybody who would like to buy. And we are still, of course, in a growing population. But I think you're absolutely right to say what is working now, because that is what you're going to have to do. So I can tell you that retailing is still absolutely working right now, as long as you are buying the property cheap enough that you can fully repair it, because this business of, yeah, I'm just going to do a buff and puff and leave the old furnace and the old roof on there and it's okay because it'll sell in 3 days for above asking price, that's not working so well anymore. You need to buy, and that was happening because of the market, right? I couldn't, the market was so hot that I had to pay 85% of what the property was worth, and then I really couldn't afford to replace the 20-year-old furnace that still works or the 15-year-old roof that doesn't leak because I paid too much for the house. And yet somebody would still buy it because there were 2.5% interest rates. How can I lose? That doesn't work so much anymore. You got to buy them at the right price. You got to rehab them right. And then there is a high demand for those fully rehabbed houses if they are priced correctly. Rentals obviously still work, but boy, you have got to get, you've either got to pay a price or get terms in most of our cities that are going to be different than market price and terms. It's really hard to go buy a property, even in a C neighborhood, at full price, borrow the money from a bank or a DSCR lender where you're paying 6.75 to 7.25%. And truly have the property have positive cash flow. Now, the rent will be higher than the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance payment, but by the time you add in vacancy maintenance, long-term capital expenditures, and so on, there's no positive cash flow. And now we don't have the 10% a year jumps in prices and rents to offset that. So again, you got to buy right. I think smaller towns and rural areas are working better for rentals right now. Like, the numbers are working better than a lot of the big cities are. I think small multifamilies and small apartment buildings even are working better in the price versus rent ratio than single family homes are. I know midterm rentals are, like, short term rentals seem to have kind of gone wah-wah. Like, we had a couple of really good years and a lot of people bought properties at too high a price because of what they could get for those really good years. But now everybody I know is finding that their numbers of days per month are down and they're not able to get necessarily the same price. Now, if you're on the beach, maybe that's different. But in Cincinnati, Ohio, you're going to get less per night and you're going to have less nights filled. But midterm rentals seem to be working really well. Group homes. In any place, and I say group homes, that doesn't necessarily mean supportive housing. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm housing a particular population. I'm housing disabled veterans, or I'm housing people who are just out of drug rehab. Yes, that's working very well, but so are just pad splits. Got a nice house in a decent house in a decent area, and I'm renting it out by the bedroom. That's a pad split. When rents are way up, people have to find ways that they can afford to live in the place they want to live. And for some people, that's I'm living with three strangers in a four-bedroom house. So there's a lot of things that are definitely working very well. But what I'm finding is people don't want to learn them. I don't know how to put a finer point on it than that. I've watched a number of people that were very successful in something in 2017, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, and I haven't seen them now in 3 years. And when I run into them, I say, hey, you were like retailing 6 houses a year. What happened to you? And they say, there's just no deals out there anymore. And I say, well, that's untrue. I know. Or like Rebecca was here 3 weeks ago and she's like, I don't know what people are talking about. I've got more deals than I know what to do with. You just don't know how to truly evaluate them and find them off market and buy them at the right price. And if you would learn to do that, you could go back to doing 5 or 6 deals a year. And they're like, eh. there's people who want to be in a market that rewards speed and bravery and not in one that rewards skill. And personally, I would rather be in one that rewards skill, because it's just a better market for everybody. It's just a better... I'd rather have skillful people out there doing things, I guess is the way to put it. So, Dave, I would love to see you at this year's National Summit, because, of course, the whole topic of every National Summit every year is what is working right now. going to be lots of people talking about how they are making money, not how they used to make money, how they're doing it right now. We also got a text asking how you get those discounted tickets to the National Summit by making a pledge to WMKV. The answer is you go to WMKVFM.org. You scroll down to the bottom of that homepage, and you will very clearly see a thing that says 2026 National Real Estate Summit, and click on it, and it'll let you make a pledge and order. Now, the second question from that person who maybe also didn't tell us who they were is, how do you verify that an investor is accredited? That's a good question. There's a legal definition of accredited. If I'm not wrong about this, it is currently that they have $1.2 million in assets, excluding their personal residence, or they make, somebody correct me on this, $100,000 a year. Is that the number? And expect, so they've made at least that for the last couple of years and expect to make it again in the next year. In other words, they've got extra money. They're not going to be badly damaged by losing some money. They declare themselves to be accredited. It's not that you have to necessarily follow up with them and say, okay, show me your statement of assets and liabilities so that I can understand that you are in fact an accredited investor. They check a box that says I'm an accredited investor, and generally you believe them. Now, a few years ago before COVID, there was some kind of thing going on at the SEC where they wanted to change that rule so that you had to do at least some checking to assure yourself that you were working with an accredited investor, but I don't know if that went anywhere. Maybe somebody can catch me up on that as well. I only have one more question left here in the email box. So, and it is from SK from middle of nowhere, Colorado, is what I always get. In case you're looking, I need another income stream. Don't want another job ever. What are the best income streams that don't include a large time commitment? Okay, come on, SK. You either have to spend time or you have to spend money. You got to pick. And there is no such thing as an income stream that I would invest money to get without spending at least some time learning to understand and evaluating. That's a really good way to lose money, is to just go, oh, Joe over here, I know he's a great investor and he's raising money, $100,000 I can invest, and then he's going to give me a 12% return. Okay. Is he? Is this the kind of investment that's actually going to generate a 12% return? Is Joe an experienced operator? Does the property really exist? I mean, you know, there's a ton of scams out there. So pick something that you're willing to learn how to understand. And then if you want to passively invest to get your income streams, that's fine. But passively invest with people that you have checked out and in deals that you have checked out. If you're looking for something that's an income stream like wholesaling, you are going to spend time. If you're looking for something that's an income stream like having shared housing, that's going to take time. It's going to take time to learn it, and then it's going to take time to actually implement it as well. Oh, I was just handed the correct definition of an accredited investor is a net worth over $1 million excluding the primary residence, or income over $200,000 individually, or $300,000 jointly for each of the two prior years with a reasonable expectation of the same next year. Thank you, Matthew. One of the things that is happening at the National Summit, and I know SK, you usually like to get virtual tickets and not leave the middle of nowhere, Colorado, to come to the middle of nowhere, Ohio. But One of the topics this year is how to read a private placement memorandum. That is the very most minimum thing that you should be doing before you make any investment of money in anybody else's deal. Private placement memorandum is the thing that people give you when they they're trying to raise money and they're doing it the right way and they're trying to like pool people's money so they actually got an SEC exemption, and they are long and they are complicated, and it's easy to overlook things in them because a lot of people just go, I know Joe, he'll pay me my money back with interest. And you know, you need to learn how to read a private placement memorandum. We got 1.5 minutes left, so I'm going to answer Sean's question. I hold a duplex where one tenant rents out both units. He's been living there 3 years. First year, he rented out the entire duplex. When the other unit became vacant, the other one became vacant. He asked for permission to use it for foster care. Sean updated lease. Yay. Got good new insurance. Yay. He's a good tenant now with more stable income. I'm comfortable with the arrangement. I was late to increase the rent. I've been collecting $1,850 in rental income, and my mortgage is $1,823. And you've just discovered that that's actually negative cash flow, haven't you, Sean? The yearly lease ends July 1st. In March, I sat down to explain that I needed to increase the rent from $1,850 to $2,450. It's in a Class A neighborhood. The rents are comparable to other duplexes. This was challenging. I had allowed too much time to pass, and now instead of smaller rent increases, I'm putting my tenant and our relationship in a strain. Here's my dilemma. Water and sewer bills have been progressively increased because he has 5 children living in the home. What used to be $80 to $120 a month is now closer to $300. The new rental agreement will put me in the black, but I'm eager to secure $500 a month more in profit. Can I offer to take money off the monthly rent in exchange for the tenant taking the water and sewer bills? Yes. He literally is the one who has increased your water and sewer bill over what it would be if you had it rented out normally. That's exactly what I would do. Unless you don't trust him to pay them. And if you're in Ohio, if he doesn't pay them, you're going to end up paying them until we get that law passed that stops that. So maybe here's a compromise. Maybe only increase his rent $100 a month. And sign a water contract that says he's going to pay an additional whatever you think the level billing is, like $300 a month. But that once a quarter, that will be adjusted depending on what the bill was last quarter. So if it ends up being more, then it'll be more. If it ends up being less, it'll be less. Because in a lot of states, if the tenant agrees to pay the water and doesn't, you end up paying it anyway. So the water agreement would allow you to actually enforce that. Okay, you didn't pay for your water bill, that therefore your rent is $300 short. So maybe try something like that. And yeah, I never raise my tenants to full market rent if they're good and pay well and everything, but I do tend to raise it a little bit each year if rents have gone up. You know, maybe the rent's gone up $100 a month and I raise it 50 or 35 or something for exactly that reason. Because my taxes and insurance and utility bills have been going up like crazy over the last 5 years. And I didn't want to go to anybody and say, gosh, we have to increase you by $250 this year. That sucks. People usually can't afford that. So yeah, I believe that we are out of time. Thank you for all the great questions. And we'll be back, of course, next month with the exact same question and answer week. So anytime you want to send a question to vinoradio@gmail.com, feel free to do that. But we will be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.